All right, welcome back, NDL. Outliers are back. Episode 2. Getting ready for block 2 in season 32. Mr. Coach Vic, how are you doing, sir?
I'm all right. That's a lot of twos. That is a lot of twos.
Well, 2's not my lucky number, but it's lucky for a lot of people, so I guess we'll go with that.
True, 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 true.
All right. Well, the first block is technically, it's still open, but it's in the books for the most part as we move on to the next block. So we're going to start out by talking about some of the things that happened with the group of five teams, more specifically for this moment, the favorites, or at least some of the teams that either were voted high or voted in the top 25, close to the top 25, or just in general, we thought of in consideration for getting that group of five playoff spot. So the first one that I want to bring up, I know he is 2-0, but I did get to watch both of Central Michigan's games. Though the game against Troy, a pretty smooth game. He was able to get out to a lead early, and I don't want to say put it in cruise control, but he was more comfortable in that game. You could tell that things were clicking for him, not really playing out of character, stressing at all. But that first game against South Alabama, though he won, that was a scary game. I thought he was going to lose that game. For those that didn't see, going down to the fourth quarter, he's up two, less than 2 minutes to go. So he's got to run the ball and get a first down. He runs an option. So I want to say it was a duo, shotgun duo. He runs the option, and the blocking running back came back and got in the way of the pitch. It bounces off of him in front of the offensive line directly into a diving linebacker. So Chip is definitely like, what is going on? He has to flip immediately and play defense. So that's a heartbreaking turnover because the pitch was there. The guy was open. He probably would have been able to get a first down and just run out the clock. Now he has to play defense, and then he gets a user pick to walk it off. Definitely scary, though, because South Alabama was set up with a short field. So, hey, at the end of the day, all you have to do is survive. But that's a scary way to survive. But hey, 2-0 is 2-0, right?
That's right. 2-0 is 2-0. Speaking of a team that didn't go 2-0, that would be my guy Big Z over there at San Diego State. He lost to Indiana in a close matchup by three. It was a barn burner throughout. I watched most of that game, and it was low scoring throughout. 2017 was the final. Indiana and Phony, he coached them up on that final drive. I mean, they were precise on that final drive. San Diego State couldn't keep up with them on that final drive. He scored with about 15 seconds left, and you can only do so much with 15 seconds left. So that was the end of that game. But he did go ahead and bounce back against Oregon State. Went ahead and won by at least 20 points against Oregon State. So at least he is 1-1, still in the driver's seat for Mountain West title, even a group of five for the CFP. Because like I said, I did say this in the first episode, and I'm going to say it again. I truly feel like, other than Chip, I feel like the group of five representative is going to have one loss. I feel like we all are going to have one loss.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later because I'll definitely have something to say about that for sure. Another team that I'll go back to the 2-0 because I like the undefeated. Since I'm not undefeated, let me talk about undefeated. Old Dominion, scary. Kent State gave them a hell of a game. They were in that game late. Just Old Dominion could not pull away from them. But in the fourth quarter, two big touchdown runs and then a big interception to seal the deal. They're able to hold off Kent State. Looked fine in the other game, but again, there's that one game just trying to get out the block clean. They did what they had to do at the end against Kent State. So they remain 2-0 as well. So trying to keep up with Central Michigan.
Yeah, I'm gonna join you on that 2-0 train. 2-0 train and talk about Tulane. Tulane out of New Orleans. They have looked the most impressive. They have a win over Nebraska and a win at Washington. That is two Power Four wins with another Power Four team coming up, which we'll get to that later. But in the first game, he straight dominated MGR and Nebraska.
Hey, we don't have to talk bad about Nebraska here. This is a safe zone
No,
for us.
no, no shade on Nebraska. No shade on Nebraska. But the effort that he put up against Alabama, that game was 70 to 49 for Nebraska. So going into that game, you're thinking, hey, not necessarily an easy win or overlooking Tulane or anything like that, but hey, it's a get back on track type of game. But SSI and Tulane, they put the belt to the butt 28-7, and then he backdoors that by going upstate to Washington and getting a win at Washington, which is very hard to do in real life and in the game because of the home field advantage. He gets a win 49-17. So he gets two of the most impressive wins so far in block one.
Yeah, I'm going to agree on that. That Washington game just came right in, went right before we were about ready to start this. So we don't have Tulane stats from the game, but he was 6 of 7 on third down defensively. Well, I guess it doesn't matter how you say it, but Washington was 3 of 11 on third down, 3 turnovers. So the defense looking good so far. And you're right about Nebraska, the Nebraska Tulane game, just watching Nebraska in a loss put up 49. You would think playing against Tulane, offense is clicking. It's going to end up being a high scoring affair. Tulane was up 21-0 at the half, so they played an excellent first half. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, MGR and SSI West, they're both have a little friendly rivalry going, so they played each other a bunch. I know that they know each other well. The teams change, but sure. MGR is a Nebraska fan. He knows Nebraska well. But there's also the component of he was at Memphis before for a couple of seasons. So he knows Tulane well because he had to play Tulane at the end of the season. So he knows what that Tulane team is capable of. For West to come in and take that team and have some things working against him just in terms of the logistics. You're trying to figure out this team. You're playing against someone that's played this team multiple times. And that knows his team well. That's an impressive win for sure.
That definitely is an impressive win. And speaking of the Washington win, turnovers were the story as well. Washington had three interceptions. Pretty much a balanced game from Tulane. 174 rushing, 271 passing. Total balanced attack so far. So, like I said, both of those wins are pretty impressive.
For sure. And we're going to go ahead and keep on skiing or keep with the theme here of someone just coming in, just, bringing the paper in right before. It's had another game go final not too long ago. Marshall, we were high on them in the last episode. Coach Lingus has had the team, coming into this season for the second time. So his offenses look good going into the end of last season. It seemed fine just out the gates. Had a nice win against Memphis. And then he faces his uncle, Washington State Coach Lick. He's up 21-7. And then the wheels fell off. And when I say fell off, I mean they really, really fell off. Washington State's offense put on a clinic, though. Washington State did turn the ball over twice in the red zone. So Marshall coming up with plays when they had to, but the offense for the Cougars was just too much for Marshall at the end. Hurtful loss there. They'll look to bounce back, but just couldn't hold on to that lead, couldn't hold on to that momentum. So they finished the block 1-1.
Quickly going to recap, Boise State versus Tennessee. Tennessee, you know, SEC, came up to the blue turf and pretty much dominated as per usual with, you know, Vegas and Tennessee. He knows that team very well. Genty can only do so much, you know. Heisman front runner. Yeah, I said it. Heisman front runner. Ashton Genty can only do so much. So he put up a good fight, but, you know, Tennessee is Tennessee. So that tends to happen. Now, what I want to look at real quick is I want to apologize to everybody. Just take a moment here. I just want to apologize to everybody. I do boast in the live chat and, you know, other places when I do predict something very well. But I'm going to also own up to when I don't predict something very well. I said in the media poll, I said in the media predictions, I said in this podcast, watch out for James Madison. Oh my God, James Madison and Jason. Well, sorry about that. My bad. James Madison went 0-2. They lost the opener to Jeff Daddy. And I was weary about that. I did say that in the preview leading up. I did say, watch out for Jeff Daddy. He is back. Basketball season is over with. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, he is a basketball coach. So basketball season is over with. So he has time to focus on what he's doing while he's doing it. So he definitely passed the hell out the ball against James Madison, and James Madison was just looking and looking and looking, and then proceeds to get shut out by homie in NC State. That was his Power Four game, and he proceeded to get shut out 29-0. He says that's his first time getting shut out. I believe him. In the NDL, I believe him. But that is one hell of a way to get shut out right there. So
I'll be honest with you. I remember the only time I've been shut out in the NDL. It was the very first game I played. Old KY Shark had Virginia Tech. I took over Florida International, and I'm like, ooh, cool. I got a big matchup here. Barely could even get the ball to midfield. If I could get into field goal range, I'd kick a field goal with a second left just to say I wouldn't get shut out. I have no sense of pride. I don't care. I'd rather a 3 than a 0.
I did the same thing. I think I did the same thing either at UCLA or the half a season I was at Mississippi State. I believe I've never been shut out before. But I will take that field goal to not get shut out. I will take it.
Yeah, a tough loss for James Madison. You think, you know, after coming off from Utah, I know that Utah's quarterback does have Phil General. So Phil General is an interesting thing because for some people it doesn't matter because they don't pay attention to it. For some, it could be a distraction. For others, it's helpful. Just if nothing else, it's just telling you to coverage shell. If people are rotating the, you know, disguising their shells, that's one thing, but it just helps make coming to the line of scrimmage a little bit easier. It might be a little bit of a drop-off going to a regular quarterback and obviously a much lesser talented team. And we know Jason is going to Europe on vacation, so he's just trying to, you know, get these games banged out. Man, it was tough to see him lose in that manner. So GG's the homie, the tech god, but man, shutouts are tough to see.
Indeed. Speaking of shout-outs and everything like that, we're going to shout out a couple of teams that got victories over Power 4 teams. My guy, Old Man Wobbles at Fresno State over Washington 21-14. That was a very close game. It was in overtime. He won it in overtime. As well as football, Kelly over there at Arkansas State. He had to win 20-17 over my season 31 school at UCLA. Good luck, UCLA coach.
Yeah, winning at UCLA, that's impressive. And then we have that to got to update the notes again because, you know, just the ticker coming in. Tulane, not only do they beat Nebraska, they also beat Washington. So I'm sensing a theme here. If you're a Big Ten team, don't schedule any group of five teams because that's four games right there, upsets, G5. So kudos to the little guys there taking it out on the Big Ten. And then there was one, we'll get into this more as we get farther along in the season, but there, you know, with the conferences being so big, some conferences have already started conference play. The only group of five team that has a game played in conference, or the only, I should say, only game played in conference group of five was in the Mountain West. San Jose State, Coach Tar UNC Heel, Air Force, Coach Ank. The Spartans win 30-14. They got off to a quick start in that game, a pick six. Well, they took the opening kickoff back for a touchdown, followed up by a pick six. So right out the gates, 14-0. And they're able to hold, you know, hold serve the rest of the game and end up winning 16. So San Jose State, the first group of five team to pick up a conference win.
Shout out to Tar UNC Hill, San Jose State, 30-14. Very impressive. I have a question for you.
Okay.
So, with the change in the front runners, San Diego State, James Madison, etc., who are the new front runners for that G5 spot in the CFP?
Well, I'm going to be honest. Before you take him, I'm going to steal your thunder. I'm taking Tulane. That was the last team that I put. But after they just beat Washington, I'm taking them. I'm going to
understand.
Now, look, I know Central Michigan comes in. I would say for me personally, Central Michigan came in to start the season at the front of the line. You're coming back to the team. You're back-to-back MAC champs. You've had good showings against. And I know he lost to Kentucky last season. Got a good showing in the NIT, bowl games, good showing. He's, like, we know what Chip is capable of with Central Michigan. But if we're talking specifically the resumes starting from the beginning of the season going forward, how could you not take Tulane? We'll have to see how Washington and Nebraska finish up. But to get two wins against Power Conference teams, Nebraska, I don't have the polls in front of me. If they weren't 25, they were really close to it. I don't think Nebraska was ranked, but I'm pretty sure they were close. Those are two impressive wins.
Especially one of them being on the road. You have a road Power Four victory. That's even more impressive.
Yeah, so when we get towards, like, as we move forward, they will talk about them a little bit more coming up. But as we move forward, you're just trying to check boxes on the resume, multiple P4 wins, super helpful. And I'll pass the ball to you to let you take a team.
Oh, I'm going to take Chip. I'm going to take Dr. Bush. It's his time. Like I said earlier in the podcast, and I feel like it's Chip's to lose. I really do. I feel like he is the only person that can possibly go undefeated. Like I said, I do feel like all of us, or whoever the front runners will be, or the conference champion will have at least one, maybe two losses. I don't expect any G5 to go undefeated. But if I had to take a shot at somebody, it would be Chip. Like you said, back-to-back MAC champions, represents in the bowls, represents in the cup, know his team inside and out, to the point where he can, that dirty muck-em-up game that's very close, and you're like, oh, is EA cheating me, or is what's going on with the AI, or anything like that? He can win those games because he knows his team inside and out.
A very talented coach. Well, I'm going to take a team with one loss. I'm still going to be high on them for now, but it's pending the next block. And I guess we'll talk about that at the end here. The San Diego State. So they do lose to Indiana. That's a tough loss, especially because they had the lead late. They couldn't hold on to the lead. Indiana, fourth quarter comeback drive to get the job done. But they do have a win against I believe it was Oregon State.
Yes, it was Oregon State.
They have a loss. It's a hurtful loss. Like, all losses are hurtful. I think Chip said this on game day. When you start to compare resumes, what's the difference between 12-0 and 11-1? Do you have a loss is always going to be a negative, but the question is, do you have that positive win? Not just a win, but a positive win. San Diego State still has that opportunity because they play Miami coming up. A win against Miami and being 2-1, we'll have to see how they go the rest of the season, but that Miami win, I can assure you, of any Group of Five team, if they can pull that game off, it will be difficult. This Dealer is tough by himself. That Miami team is very talented. If you find a way to win that game, we're going to have a really interesting conversation at the end of the season if he finishes 12-1 and Central Michigan's 13-0.
That is impressive, and I do like San Diego State. Another team that's on the rise, and we're going to go in depth with them a little bit later on in the show, is ODU. I'm just going to touch on them. Devin Roach, the running back for ODU, is a monster. He, the Old Dominion coach, Mr. Pirate, he knows how to use that running back. He can torch anybody with the blocking scheme and with that running back. So they're 2-0. They are the Sun Belt team to watch now because, as we know, the CFPG 5 spot goes through the Sun Belt, and they are the most impressive Sun Belt team so far.
Yeah, I have to add on to that. The one thing that's most impressive, so, you know, doing the NDL ESPN edits, having to watch the way he runs with Devin. We were talking about this before we started the cast. It's when you see a lot of big runs, it's usually one of two things. It's a dive or some type of run up the middle where there's either a lack of gap discipline, like the user may over pursue, or a blitz that you blitz the wrong gap, up the middle touchdown. Or it's a toss or stretch where you're able to hit the edge and there's no help coming from the backside, touchdown. If you watch ODU's runs, his runs are really impressive because they're runs that start inside. He does a really great job of setting up his blocks. He plays off his offensive lineman so well. When he's getting to the second level, it's tough to get to him. His running is, I'd have to say, it's top tier. I'd love to see what he could do with a better offensive line and running back combination. But the way he runs the ball in between the tackles, got to be top five in the league. I'm very impressed with his running attack. And I'm going to force you to talk about yourself because I'm just a mean person. So I'm going to take Marshall, even though they just lost.
Oh, my God.
You knew I was going to do it. Marshall, 1-1. We had to update. You know, in the notes, we had him 1-0. They had a really impressive win against Shady Nasty in Memphis. Not able to pull away, but man, his offense is so explosive. He's able to attack all areas of the field in the passing game, not just the deep edges, not the seam routes in the slot. He works all areas of the field in the passing attack, so he forces the defense to be spread out because you have to account for everyone and everything. Now, Washington State, I didn't get a chance to see the game. I'll go back and look at it, but I did see that he lost. He was up 21-7 and had a really rough second half. Clearly, the defense wasn't doing enough because you gave up 38 points in the second half, but the offense not able to keep up. And they've been able to keep up for the most part in most of his tenure there at Marshall. So it's a hurtful loss, but it is also against his uncle. As someone that's played against my dad a lot growing up, I totally understand things can be clicking, but when you play someone that knows you very well, those games can be very difficult regardless of what the talent gap is on the field. So I'm still high on Marshall. He just slides down the list a little bit for me with that loss. So that only leaves one team left. So Vic, take it away.
I don't like to talk about myself. We are 2-0. Go Conference USA. I'm doing well. I have a upcoming game against a Power Four school in Iowa State. Hopefully I do well. That is the end of that. Now, I will say this. People have commented or, you know, said stuff and other podcasts and stuff like that, talking to you, Big Red, about my cup results and everything like that. And I'm going to tell you this. I only took Sam Houston State for a few reasons. One of those reasons, and that is very high on the list, all I wanted to do in the cup was beat that coach from SMU. That is it. That is all I wanted to do. I did that. That is it, and that is all. I will forever beat him. He will never beat me. Simple as that.
Hey, don't never say never, because you, when it comes to the video games, you just never know what to expect.
If I can beat him with San Jose State and Sam Houston State, God forbid I get a Power Four team.
Well, we'll have to see when if that happens. Well, those are the teams we're kind of looking at right now that are in the front runner. There's some other teams that are lurking, but we'll let the season play out a little bit more so we can kind of flesh out, kind of break down what would be that second and third tier in the group of five teams. I know we were going to talk about power rankings for the group of five. I'll just keep mine super short right now. I have Tulane number one, which is why I wanted to talk about them first. I have Central Michigan number two. I have Old Dominion three. I have SDSU at four, and it's pending. And then I've got Sam Houston at five.
I can go with the same list, but I'm going to go Marshall at five. I'm not going to pick myself. Same four, and take out me and put in Marshall at five.
Gotcha. Okay. Now?
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying, with those rankings and everything like that, we're going to ask you, what was the most surprising result? But the most surprising result was one game. Because I'm going to give Charlotte a little grace, because I feel like, because right after that game, he had said something about his roster. So I feel like he didn't have his roster set up in that game. So it may have been roster issues why he only scored 10 points. So I'm going to give him grace with that. But the game I want to talk about with you is that New Mexico State Liberty game. That was a late night game, and I watched the second half. And when I tell you both of them teams didn't want to lose or win, this was the example of that. You had Liberty basically about to take the lead, but inexplicably botches the extra point to leave the game tied. So we go into overtime. And then after the first overtime, they exchange touchdowns. Then Liberty throws an interception, and you're like, well, that's game. Then the next play, New Mexico State fumbles. And that was the third overtime. Now you're battling two-point conversions. A play happens, and then all of a sudden, it's an interception. And he takes it all the way back for two and ends the game in three overtime.
Yeah, that was losses like that hurt. They just do. And Coach Bearass, one of my favorite coaches in the league, I haven't really talked to him much since we've been back in NDL. Since it's been back. But, man, me and him used to play every year. For a stretch, PS2, PS3. Really good dude. Great coach. To see him lose in that manner was really hurtful. Because one, the extra point that would have given Liberty a lead, you miss. And it wasn't a block. It was just the shank. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Like, I'm just, no, I'm I look down because it's an extra point, and I hear the announcer, oh, and he misses. Like, huh? What? I have to look up. Like, is that right? Then in overtime, you get the interception. And it's not even that he got the interception. He went down. He didn't try to run it back. Because it got deflected. He caught it off the deflection. And then he just went down. And I could understand why it went down. But, hey, you could try to run it back. If you run it back for a touchdown, that's game. Then you fumble it, you know, trying to set up a field goal, you know, trying to get closer. You fumble. The guy that recovers the fumble is the same guy they got the pick to. So give him his flowers. It's a good win for Liberty. But just from, in terms of a heartbreaking result, just the way that it played out, it's tough to see a loss like that.
Definitely. It's definitely tough to see a loss like that. That is heartbreaking to see a victory get snatched up like that in three overtimes.
Yep. And then I guess I'll be the one to talk about it since I'm the Nebraska fan here. I know that I've mentioned earlier that they're both rivals. They played each other a lot. There's a lot of smack talking in the conference chats, all in good nature. They're good guys. They get along. But just the way that, like, me and SSI have talked. We've talked in DMs, like, man, I'm not really feeling this team. This team feels slow. I don't like this team. So he's still trying to get used to what works with these guys. I was very surprised, not necessarily that he won the game, because I know they know each other well. But after seeing Nebraska put up 49 points against Bama and one of the best coaches in the league to not have a point and a half, extremely surprising to me. Very impressive for Tulane.
Very much so. Very impressive. Like I said before, early in the podcast, Tulane has two of the most impressive wins. Probably going to have the two most impressive wins by any G5 throughout the whole season 32.
Yep, pending one game. But we'll get to that here in a minute.
True.
So, and that kind of recaps block one. But block two is going to open tomorrow. There's a couple of games that we wanted to talk about. I want to get, like, seriously in depth, because I know that game day is going to talk about some. I tried my best to not touch on games that they're going to talk about or that they're going to choose, to give, you know, some other focus to teams in the group of five. But we have it broken down into two sections. We have out of conference against P4 teams, and then out of conference, or just basically group five of matchups. Some are in conference. So we'll start with out of conference first. The one that kind of stood out to me would have been Tulane, but I'll skip that for now. We talked about them enough. I want to bring up Arkansas State. They got that win at UCLA in block one, and now they're at home against Maryland. So they have the potential to have, while we talk about Tulane with two wins against power conference teams, Arkansas State could potentially do the same thing. They have one against UCLA. Could they beat Maryland at home, another upset? We'll have to see. I have my eyes on that matchup.
The matchup I have glued in, one of the matchups I have glued in, is Marshall at Michigan State. Again, like you said, another Sun Belt team going into, or G5 team going into the Big Ten. Can Michigan State prove that they are one of the big boys, or are they just little brother?
We'll have to see. Marshall's going to have to get that offense back on track. I'll jump back to Tulane. Well, actually, I'll be nice. I'll leave Tulane for you. I'll bring up the other game, Sam Houston at Iowa State. Sam Houston is 2-0. Iowa State, they had a win against Iowa. And then, man, they had a game against Ole Miss. We'll just leave it at that. That was a rough one. The first half looked good, and then the second half just, wow, is just the blitz from Ole Miss. So Iowa State, they're looking to bounce back. They're at home against an undefeated Sam Houston team. What Iowa State team are we going to see? The team that played against Iowa and was dominant defensively, or a defense that struggled to stop the rushing attack of Ole Miss? We'll have to see.
We will have to see. And the other game, since I'm glad you took that game, the other game is Tulane and Wake Forest. Can Tulane offense, or can Tulane as a whole team, keep up the momentum? Like we've already explained, two powerful wins. Here comes another on the road against another Power Four team. Can they keep up the momentum?
Yep, that's definitely one to circle there, because that could be, again, talking about the resume, you're checking boxes. Three of them, that's a huge box to check.
Oh, yeah, that is a resume solidifier right there.
Mm-hmm. Now we'll talk about just group of five matchups. One that I had circled, given the way they lost their only, they have both have one loss, they're 1-1. The way they lost that game, this is one of those confidence rebuilders. You've got New Mexico at Tulsa. New Mexico, we just talked about, they had a tough loss to Liberty in overtime, in triple overtime. Tulsa had a lead going into the fourth quarter. And then they gave up, like they were up 7 going into the fourth quarter, and they lost by 20. So they are looking to get back on track. So the loser is going to get their second loss. And given their schedules, it takes them out the running if we're talking about big picture or potential playoff spot. But just in the moment, those are tough losses to take. A win here kind of gets you back on track. If you lose this game, it's one of those things you might have to hit the panic button. Season could start to spiral out of control.
Yeah. The other game that's G5 on G5 that is a conference game that I want to touch on is Memphis and Navy. Can Memphis bounce back? They took an L, and now they're trying to look to bounce back in conference versus Navy. Navy and Coach Ice, can he pull off an impressive victory in conference?
Yep, that's going to be a good game there. And then the dark horse that we haven't talked about because I had to wait to see. You've got Central Michigan at Ball State.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a quality win if Central Michigan can get it. Barkley, we have a Barkley sighting. He's 1-0 on the season. He's one very talented coach. If he's going to get his games in, he is going to make life very difficult in the MAC. This is definitely, I think on paper, this is going to be, from a coach perspective, Chip's biggest challenge in the MAC. So this is an important game for him, and it's on the road. So I'm really curious to see how this one plays out.
To add to that statement, we are both high on Barkley, and this could be Chip's only loss.
Well, we're going to have to see. Well, there's two other games we want to talk about. We want to kind of spotlight these, and we'll still try to keep it quick because I see we're getting long on time. But we'll go with the smaller one first. Old Dominion and Virginia. ODU's 2-0. They're going on the road to face an ACC team. The offense has looked great so far, especially that rushing attack. Devin Roche, Roach, I'm going to get his Pirates going to correct me at some point, so I'll have it right. I clearly need to because I'm seeing the runs that he's had. I'm having to watch a lot of touchdown runs by him. So can that offense stay on track? But the thing I'm looking at isn't so much the offense. The running game, I think, will still be solid. The question is, can the defense get going? They had some struggles against Kent State. Virginia's going to be a more talented team, and Virginia's playing at home. I'm worried if ODU falls behind, it's going to really put the defense in the bind. If they're going to be who we think they could be, they're going to have to get the defense on track.
Not only that, can the defense figure it out? If he does get behind, say he does get behind 7-10 points against Virginia, can his passing attack bring him back as well as that defense? Can he get stops and can he get some downfield passing to help out that run game and Devin to try to come back.
Yep. It's interesting questions. ODU on paper is not the most talented team, so there's going to be some limitations there. I'm really curious to see how Mr. Pirate Flag tries to scheme it up, especially as we go forward on the defensive side of the ball throughout the year. And then the last game, SDSU at Miami. Big game for both teams. Miami already took a loss. I know Dealer's not in the greatest of moods. He is not able to get a win against Florida at all on this year's version of the game, and he's not happy about it. He bounced back against Bowling Green, but now you have SDSU. They played last season at Snapdragon, and Miami took care of business. Now Miami is at home. Is SDSU going to be able to make enough plays to be able to hang around? The only way I could see them winning this game is it has to be a shootout. They've got speed at running back. You've got Polk that can definitely blow the top off of any defense, even a power four defense. That man is a speedster. But collectively, they're going to have to make a lot of plays. They're going to have to score at least, I'd say, 36 points to have a shot here.
I agree with you. It's going to be passing game mixed in with the run. You're going to have to go pass first and run second, because you're going to have to score points with that Miami team. Cam Ward is projected to be the number one pick, so his talent is on a whole nother level compared to SDSU. So they're going to have to keep up with him and them. And like you said, Dealer is absolutely pissed over that Florida game, so he wants revenge in an immediate way. So can Big Z and San Diego State stay with that Miami team in Miami?
Yep. That home field advantage is definitely going to be tough. So playing at San Diego State, no offense, I'm an Aztec alum. It's a neutral field. It's not really a home field advantage. Playing at Miami is a whole nother world. So they'll have their work cut out for them. But let me tell you, if the Aztecs win that game, no matter what anyone else in a group of five does for the rest of the season, that will be the most impressive win. And when we're talking resume, an A-plus win matters.
Exactly. And before we get out of here, I am going to give you a ball nor fact. This ball nor fact is a legendary fact. Before we had the 12-team playoff, we had the 4-team playoff. Before we had the 4-team playoff, we had this thing called the BCS. You ever heard of it?
Sadly, yes. I'll explain why after.
Well, you want to know what led to the BCS? Now, the SEC claimed that, oh, it was the old commissioner. No. No, it wasn't. It wasn't the old commissioner. It was actually the Rose Bowl committee and BYU's 1996 season. BYU went 14-1. Yes, yes. I said 14-1 in 1996. They had a shot at a Bowl Alliance, as it was called back then, game, but they was relegated to the Cotton Bowl. And they was never taken as a serious threat as a national championship contender. This when BYU still had a big brand. Lavelle Edwards was still the coach. BYU was still a thing. They took it all the way up to judicial courts to argue their case. So after all that happened, the Bowl Alliance got with the Rose Bowl committee and told them to stop being stubborn, and therefore the BCS was created.
And then we've gone from 2 to 12, and people want more still.
It's gonna get to 16.
People want 16. These kids have to take. They have exams. Let them be students.
These kids ain't in class no more. They take online classes.
Well, I'll say one thing about the BCS. The only reason that I really know anything about the BCS, so I'm going to be honest, I didn't really start getting into football until the late 90s because I was still living overseas at the time. So I'm not waking up at 2 in the morning to watch college football. I just couldn't do it. I have, like, yeah, it's the weekend, but I'm just not doing it at that age. But
very understandable.
I'm a Nebraska fan. We moved back to the United States. We live in Colorado. So, like, this is cool. Boulder is about an hour and 50, well, maybe an hour and a half drive from me. So I've gotten to see Nebraska play a couple of times there. And the first game that first college football game I got to attend was that Nebraska-Colorado game. If you're a Nebraska fan, you know what I'm talking about. I'm super excited. I have my, you know, quote-unquote Eric Crouch jersey, and I just watch the Huskers get the doors blown off.
That's the Chris Brown, not the R&B singer, but the running back, 6-touchdown game, right?
Mm-hmm. And then the BCS. That was a fun year, wasn't it? Because, what, we had Nebraska, who didn't even win his division, so he couldn't play for the Big 12 championship. So you have Colorado playing for the Big 12 championship.
Yep.
You have Oregon with Joey Harrington in the pack. And guess who gets the pleasure of playing Miami? Somehow Nebraska.
I always felt like Oregon got screwed, but they never said nothing about it. I feel like they could have got a bigger fuss about getting screwed because Oregon was the lofty number two because Nebraska lost. And then with Colorado winning the whole league, it's like, okay, it should be Oregon and Miami. But I guess they was like, we don't like Oregon, so we don't have them fight it out with Colorado over here.
Yeah, Nebraska being in that championship game was mind-blowing to me. Like, living in the state, having to hear the pushback from, you know, CU fans in state was one thing. But even in the moment, I knew Nebraska didn't deserve to be in that game. And I was very open about it. I'm a fan of my team, but I try to be objective. Objectively, Nebraska didn't deserve to be in that game. And, I mean, let's be honest, Miami wasn't losing to any of those teams, in my opinion, anyway. But Nebraska didn't deserve to be there, and all I needed to see in that game was when Eric Crouch got ran down trying to scramble, like, instant rundown. I'm like, yep, it's over. That's our best player. And they just ran him down like he's an average speed guy. Like, yep, it's a wrap. GG's.
I'm going to end it on this. You know what ironically that is, but how it converts to the age we're in now? That Nebraska team kind of is like the Ohio State team that just won the Natty. Think about it.
Oh, God, don't do this. Don't do this. Freak Blockham is looking somewhere. He's like, yes, talk bad about Ohio State. I can't do it. They're the champs. Oh, man. Oh, Ohio State. They should have just went undefeated. Then it would have made things a lot easier. But it's okay. It is what it is.
That's true. That is true. So, yeah, that Ohio State team and that Nebraska team kind of correlates. But one didn't win the national championship. One did.
Yeah. Ohio State had some trip-ups during the season. But they were able to win them. Like, I'm thinking about Nebraska. Like, man, I can't believe we're hanging with them. And then you go from we're hanging with them, like, come on, we can win this game. Let's go get this game. You have the coach taking a 15-yard penalty, or should have taken a 15-yard penalty, which was wild. Like, that, just the way that the Nebraska-Ohio State game ended was very eventful, but the better team won. And, no, Ohio State had a really good team, so we'll have to see what they do next season. But, man, I'll end it on this note. I don't care. I'm pretty sure most people in the league know I hate CU. Like, I legitimately hate CU. Want them to lose every game they play, in every sport they play, in any possible way. Debate team, some, I don't know. I'm trying to think what the word is. Like, the, I can't think of it. I can't think of it. Like, I literally want CU to be terrible in everything that they do. But at the end of the day, if you tell me Nebraska can win a championship and have a loss to CU or go undefeated and lose in the playoffs, I'll take that championship and that loss to CU. And every time they complain, I'll just show them a picture of the trophy.